The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox take game one against Baltimore of this four-game set. They win 4-3. Strong performances from the bullpen and a couple of key home runs from Roman Anthony and Jarren Duran. Red Sox just sneak by in this one with the 4-3 final. I'm your host. I'm Jason. I'm here with Doug and Chris. And guys, after a pretty successful weekend in New York, it was important, I think, to go to Baltimore. This is a team that you struggled against last week, and kind of really take game one here and show everyone that you're not going to just slip up now because you're facing a lower opponent and you're coming off a high of, you know, taking three or four from the Yankees. This was a big one because at this point, you're in a tight race. Every game is going to be really important. And especially with it being a bullpen game, you know, you want to start the series kind of stealing that one before you get your rotation set. So, Doug, I'll start with you. I mean, you know, kind of different circumstances. Bernardino opening up, you know, Richard Fitz was a little shaky, left with an injury. But overall, are you pleased with the fact that they at least took game one and now seem to be on a good start for this four-game set?
Yeah, you have to be. I think a bullpen game, you know, always makes me a little nervous. But Bernardino started great, had a great first inning. And, you know, Fitz ran into some trouble in the third, but he really settled down and he looked really good. He left with, they said, bicep soreness or something. But, and you know, Baltimore is part of this easy schedule that we've had left. They're not an easy team. I know that they've underachieved this year, but if you look at their numbers since, I think it was May 30th, they have the same record as the Tigers and the Cubs, and they're like 7 games over .500 in that time. So for the second half of the year, they've been a solid team. They have good players. They have some good pitching. I don't think they're as bad as their record says, even though they just really struggled at the beginning of the year. So I think, you know, Baltimore series are tough. And taking game one when you have a bullpen start is just huge. And, you know, that home run by Jarren just really, really, it was just lifted our team tonight. And the bullpen was just nails. The bullpen was great. You know, Garrett had that first leadoff double and then strike out three in a row. I think that was the biggest part of the game.
Yeah, it was a huge win. I mean, it looked like the Sox were going to just completely throw away all the momentum from our trip to the Bronx, where we took 3 out of 4 from the Yankees. And it looked like everything was going to go back to status quo, right? The Yankees are playing a soft team. They're absolutely bludgeoning them. I think they're up 7-0 the last time I checked. And the Sox were going to more than likely lose, it looked like, to a team that they should beat. And that's been the story of this team the whole season. And that's why, you know, I've said it before, we have not been able to, you know, create a gap between us and teams like the Yankees, who we've absolutely just, you know, owned this season, because we lose the teams that we shouldn't. And it looked like it was going to happen today. And, you know, then Duran hit that 3-run home run and we didn't really look back. I mean, there were some dicey moments for sure. You know, the irony is this was a bullpen game, and, you know, I'm with you, Doug. Like, I always get worried with bullpen games, but our bullpen actually, like, held up. I mean, Fitz is really the one who was responsible for all the runs. He was able to rebound, and it's tough to see him go down with that forearm injury. But, I mean, I don't think the bullpen or anyone that's classified as bullpen really gave up an earned run tonight. Bernardino didn't, Matz didn't, Whitlock didn't, and Chapman didn't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was much needed. It was good to see. And, you know, it's encouraging that they got the win. I'm hoping tomorrow with an actual starter, we can just really put another W in our pockets and move along here.
Yeah, I think it's especially important because this one had the recipe to be a letdown, right? Like, and a lot of people would say Sunday's game against New York was the letdown, and a lot of people wanted the sweep. But in my mind, you got this, you got the win, and you got the season series win against them. So
yeah,
you kind of you did your job against the Yankees this year. That's huge for this team. But today and tonight's game had all the makings for a letdown. You got a bullpen game. You're facing Sugano, who gave the lineup some troubles last time out. You know, he kind of had them off balance. And I just feel like if you had started this series with a loss, especially with it being a bullpen game, you kind of would question the urgency of this team. Like, yes, you are on top of the wild card now, but you've got to stay vigilant to keep that top spot of the wild card. Because we talked about it on the show, like, you want home field advantage in those series because they're short series and, you know, you get to stay home for the entire three games if it takes that long. So it's huge to get that home field advantage, especially for this Red Sox team that plays really well at home this year. So it had all the makings of a letdown, and they, you know, they overcame that. You know, they were down 3-1. You know, Fitz did kind of run some trouble there, but then you get the huge home run from Duran. And that's, you know, for a guy like him, that you need him to heat up in the second half, because his first half wasn't terrible, but he hasn't been the Jaron Duran of 2024. And, you know, he hasn't been the Jaron Duran that we know he's capable of being. So if he can kind of start to, you know, heat up a little bit, maybe get a little bit of a power surge going too, that's going to really, really help this club. So I thought the whole game they played pretty well. I loved the play at third by Matz. It was not a good throw, but I think Bregman really saved his bacon. What did you guys think of that play?
Yeah, big time. I mean, that's a gold glover for you. That's a leader of the team. That's just plays that need to be made by a team that's on a run for a playoff spot. Those are the plays that you need to make. You need to, you know, that ball and on a Yankees team is getting thrown into the dugout. And, you know, it wasn't a great throw, but it's a tough play. You know, he turned quick to third. He made the right read. And you rely on your gold glove third baseman to make a great play. And he did. And that's probably turned out to be the biggest play of the game.
Yeah, you need your leaders, you know, to step up and stop the bleeding when there's bleeding, right? You know, whether right. It's figuratively or even if it's in a series or a microcosm in a game. And, you know, when it comes to the pitching, you know, we look to Crochet, right? Like when everyone's getting roughed up, it's like, all right, we need him to come out here and kind of settle us down. Same thing for Bregman, especially defensively. I mean, he's been absolutely phenomenal at third base for us. You know, it's laughable now thinking like the amount of, you know, up in arms moments that we had with Rafael Devers sitting here and thinking like, oh, I can't believe this guy's taking my position. This is why he's taking your position. Because if that ball was hit to Rafael Devers, we're probably looking at a loss tonight. And again, I'm not trying to crap all over Devers and rehash old memories, but it's just the truth at this point. I mean, Bregman has been an emotional leader. He's been a defensive leader. And let's face it, he's also, I think, probably our best hitter. I think he's the highest batting average for the team thus far. Granted, he missed a decent amount of time this season. But, I mean, he's one of the many reasons that we won tonight. So,
yeah, it was a key play. And, you know, Merlone said on the broadcast, because the next batter hit a deep fly to center. And, you know, it didn't get out of the ballpark. But he said, you know, that's a tie ball game right there. Yep. If Bregman doesn't make that tag. So, yeah, that's the difference. And, again, you know, I think people probably get tired of tracing everything back to Rafael Devers. But, like, it's kind of hard not to. Because, as you said, Chris, like, if he's over there at third, he's either dropping that throw or – he doesn't make the swipe tag quick enough, or, you know, something is going to go wrong there. And it's just such a big difference having a guy like Bregman, who is a gold glover, and, you know, he's doing it with the bat too. Like, yeah, it sucked when he was hurt, but nothing you can do about that. Now that he's back and he's healthy and he's swinging a good bat, it's like, it's such an upgrade over what you had with Devers in terms of a guy who can do both. He can hit, you know, have a good bat and lead your team offensively and also play Gold Glove caliber defense at third base. Even if Rafael Devers hits 40 home runs for the Giants this year, he's not giving them that. He's not giving them, you know, the leadership and the defense that you get over there. And it shows. That team went in the toilet once he got there. And, you know, it's probably not all on him, but you can see the difference. Like, Red Sox kind of went in a different direction than the Giants since that trade. So, you know, another one that you got to look back and say, yeah, you know, he's going to be a great player while he's with the Giants. There's no doubt about that. But I think we can all say that, you know, we're not lamenting that trade too much. Another point I wanted to bring up is, so this was tweeted out before the game. Just a couple of guys that keep an eye on, injury guys, you know, when they'll come back. This is from Ian Brown. Does a really good job covering the Red Sox. So Willie Abreu, probably not coming back until the second half of the next home stand against Cleveland. So he's still a ways away. But it looks like Refsnyder and Slayton could come back at some point in this Baltimore series. So I think that'd be a good lift for this team, especially Slayton. The bullpen was nails tonight, but having another guy that can pitch in high leverage situations going forward is going to be huge for this team. You know, Refsnyder, he's nice to have, especially against lefties, but I feel like you've missed Slayton a lot more. I don't know how you guys feel, but to me, he's the one that I'm looking forward to getting back.
Definitely. I mean, there was talks about him coming back in New York. So I think he should definitely be back in this series. And yeah, if Willie's still down, I know the password's up, but getting Refsnyder back will be good. You know, he really does hit righties he really does mash left. Like, he really, really does. And the way Fitz looked tonight, even though he left hurt, it makes me wonder, like, should he be in instead of May? And, you know, I don't know if you guys saw Peyton Tolley the other night or yesterday. I mean, this kid looks good. This kid looks really good. And I think we should at least give him a shot before the playoffs start.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would like to see Peyton Tolley at some point before the season ends. And I'm sure, unfortunately, with the amount of injuries we have, and even, I mean, let's face it, subpar performances from starters and even, you know, relievers in some points, he will get his opportunity. I'm definitely excited to see Slayton. You can never have too many bullpen arms, especially with as much as we have a tendency to tax our bullpen in certain moments. We shouldn't necessarily have to. But what I will say is I am excited to see Refsnyder because, you know, the one thing we haven't really talked about yet, and it's been a glaring issue, even though, and I think the fact that we took 3 of 4 from the Yankees and then we won tonight's game, is the situational hitting with people, runners in scoring position, has still plagued this team and this offense specifically in key moments. And you know what? Yeah, when you're beating up on the Yankees in some games, it gets covered up. But I mean, I think about tonight. Yeah, we won 4-3. It was great that we came back. This is a game where if we would have just drove in half the guys in runners in scoring position, we have a little bit of a cushion. This is a 3-run win, maybe 2 runs, and you're feeling a lot better. And again, I felt good with Chapman with a 1-run lead, but like getting to that point and some of the heroics that we needed, you know, specifically we talked about the Bregman play. I mean, and then Bregman made another good play towards, I think it was in the 8th inning or it might have been
the ninth. Yeah.
There's too many close calls. I mean, think about the one run game in New York, right? Like, one of us, the Yankees, had to win it, right? It just happened to be us that scored that run, but it could have just as easily been a 1-0 win for the Yankees. And that series looked completely different splitting versus taking 3 out of 4, especially the way that series ended. So Refsnyder definitely would give us that opportunity to have a different dimension, especially with a lot of left-handed pitchers that we face. You know, with the guy on third, where it's just like you just need to make contact with one out or no outs, and we seem to be able to struggle doing that. Or even a guy on second, where it's like now you have the option, you can bunt, or you know what, just try and get a single and drive him in, which, you know, has been a trouble for this offense for some time now.
Yeah, and I think getting Refsnyder back will allow the password to kind of go back down to AAA and just, you know, kind of hone his craft a little bit more. I still like the look of the kid, but he looks overmatched at the moment. And look, it's a little unfair. His MLB debut is against Max Fried. I mean, you know, and look, Max Fried's been struggling in the second half, but that's still a tall ask. But he does look a little bit overmatched at the plate. He's a good athlete. He's a good prospect. I don't think that, you know, I just don't think that he's quite ready, especially for a team that is in a playoff push. And as you mentioned, Chris, like, they need guys who are experienced, who can hit in those clutch situations when they need to push an extra run across, and they really just, they need that good situational hitting with runners in scoring position. Sometimes, you know, the rookies are not as good at that. And I think a guy like Garcia, who's just trying to get his feet wet at the major league level and just trying to, you know, do his best to kind of get used to that, that's not the best spot for him. So I'm glad they called him up. I'm glad they gave him a shot, and he got at least a little bit of a look at, you know, some MLB pitching. I don't know when Refsnyder gets activated, but I'm assuming that they'll try and squeeze him in. They'll try and squeeze a password in, I mean, for one more start before he does. Just give him one more game to maybe get that first major league hit that he's still looking for. But I think it will be good to get Refsnyder back, send him back down. And, you know, Slayton is just going to give you such a good option out of the bullpen. You know, you don't have to go to Greg Weissert, you know, five times in 1 week. You know, you'll have another guy that can kind of spell him a little bit. And we know that Slayton can pitch really well in high leverage situations. So I think getting those guys back would be huge. It'll be a little bit longer for Abreu, but that's okay, because you know what, you had an outfield jam to begin with. And, you know, it means more Yoshida, but if Yoshida can do what he did tonight, where takes a walk, gets a hit, you know, starts getting on base a little bit more. He had a line drive to first that, you know, was a bit of a tough play, but, you know, maybe a lesser first baseman doesn't make that play and he gets on base. Like, if he can just do little things like that, I don't think you're going to, you know, you're not going to lament Yoshida being out there too much. I don't think it's going to cost you too much. So hopefully Abreu gets back soon, and, you know, it's not any longer than that, but I think you're still fine. I think the lineup is still okay, even though they're flawed, but I think they'll be okay for the stretch.
I agree. Yeah. And like you said, we had the log jam in the outfield. So if there's any spot where we can maybe afford missing a guy for a few weeks, it's definitely in the outfield. And because, I mean, we haven't even mentioned Roman Anthony with a leadoff home run tonight, right? The youngest Sox ever to do it. I mean, that's insane. They've been around for over 100 years. So anytime you can do that, that's pretty impressive. And, you know, if he's picking up the power that we're missing from Abreu, then, you know, it almost makes it seem like, you know, there's an extra spot that a trade will be happening in the offseason, it feels like.
Yeah, and I think another interesting point, Brad brought it up, I just put it up. So Wong is hitting better for average now than Nevarius. Two more hits tonight, getting more playing time, not an automatic out now. I couldn't agree more. And that's, you know, I was listening to our podcast the other day. I think Terry was on. It might have been with you, Doug, or Nick. Can't remember. But he was mentioning the fact that Nervais is, you know, quietly starting to really cool down. And the fact that Wong isn't an automatic out is so helpful. But the fact that he's, like, actually starting to bat higher for average, I didn't even recognize that. But, I mean, it couldn't have come at a better time, because could you imagine if both these guys were struggling? And, I mean, let's face it, the offense overall is still kind of going through these dry spells. If both of them were struggling, especially in that New York series, and then coming into this one, like, we could be looking at a completely different scenario for our team right now. Because, I mean, to be fair, Wong's had some clutch hits and has driven in some runs in the last week and a half for this team and for an offense that is struggling. So that is very good to see. But I really would like to see a couple of these guys. Jaron Duran, the fact that he hit that 3-run home run was good, because, I mean, he had so many opportunities in the last two series to really crank in some runs and didn't. But, you know, I'm seeing Johnny here, who writes some fantastic articles for us in our website, bastards@bostonbaseball.com. Still haven't replaced Devers bat. Johnny, I don't think we're going to replace the Devers bat, certainly not this year. I mean, if one of these guys, if Roman Anthony could just keep at this trajectory, it'll kind of soften the blow. But as far as a guy who's going to hit, you know, 35 plus home runs, driving 110 RBIs, it's not going to happen. But the good news is there's still a lot of upside for many of the guys on this team. We've got a relatively young core. If these guys can figure it out, finally, a lot of them, even the guys who were quote unquote part of the young core but have been here for a little bit, like a Jaron Duran, if things continue the way that they are, they're going to get their first taste of playoff baseball. And I think for the future of this team, for the next quote unquote 3 to 5 years, that's super important. I don't expect to win the World Series this year, but I expect to compete for one within the next 3 to 5 seasons. And these guys finally dipping their feet in what has been uncharted water for this franchise, which we play off baseball, is immensely important right now. So,
yeah. Long hitting has been huge because our biggest problem with runners in scoring position is that the top of our lineup's getting on and the bottom half is not hitting them in because the bottom half's really struggling with Sedan and Navarez and it was Wong. And, you know, him starting to put together a little bit and actually look like a big league hitter up there, just that is huge for us.
It absolutely is. And I'm glad you brought up Sedan too, because he's starting to disappear. Man. I mean, yeah. Really rough night for him. He had that.
Yeah.
He struck out looking. It was not a good pitch. So, you know, he shouldn't have been called out. But then he's staying there in the batter's box for way too long. Like, I'm surprised he didn't get tossed, because that was pretty blatant, you know, disrespect to the ump there. And, yeah, it was a bad call. But, like, you know, that
it's
was
one thing when you're already over three.
Yeah, and you know what I mean? So I get it, but then the next at bat after that, he strikes out on three pitches and he chases a fastball like 10 feet out of the zone. Like, so Sedan's kind of in a mode where he's in his own head a little too much. You can tell that the struggling is starting to get to him. I think that's who he is as a player. He's just a very emotional guy. When he's on, he's like the best guy to have in your dugout. Like, he hits that walk off, he does the, you know, point to his forearm, ice in my veins kind of thing. Like, that's great. When he's struggling, though, he looks like a basket case. So, yeah, guys like Connor Wong stepping up and kind of resurrecting his season and now all of a sudden being a viable option to put in the lineup every other day, that's huge. Because I do think Narvaez's struggles come from him being overplayed. Like, he's not used to playing this many games. And as catcher, it's the most demanding position on the field. So his legs are probably tired. And, you know, as any athlete knows, when your legs are tired, you can't do anything. Like, you know, people say, oh, well, he doesn't need his legs to hit. Yes, you do. You absolutely do. So I think it's absolutely that he's been overworked. And I think for Cora, putting Wong in every other day and having a true catching tandem going forward is going to help. It's going to help both those guys, because I think the more at-bats that Wong gets, the better he's doing. That's why the average has been going up, because unfortunately, when he was struggling, Cora kind of, you know, hit him in the dugout for 6 days out of the week. And then, okay, you know, Carlos is dead ass exhausted. Get, you know, go in there. Like, it doesn't work that way. It's too long for him to be sitting. So I think Connor Wong's resurgence is going to be really important, because you're going to need to protect Narvaez, keep him healthy, keep him a little more fresh, and have a true catching tandem going forward. And as you mentioned, Doug, like, having guys at the bottom half of the lineup that can contribute is important too. It can't just be Bregman, can't just be Duran. You know, it's got to be the entire lineup, especially when you have guys out like Russ Snyder and Abreu. So I think that will be very important. I wanted to circle back to the Peyton Tolley idea of him potentially getting called up and getting some time. I love the idea. I really do. It seems like this kid is legit, and it reminds me of what happened. This is a bit of a poll, so, you know, bear with me, because it's from 10 years ago, but if you remember the 2015 Royals World Series team, they called up a kid named Brandon Finnegan. He was 22 years old. They had just drafted him the year before, and they had some guys in that. They had that awesome bullpen of like Kelvin Herrera in his prime and like all those guys. Like, their starters only went 5 innings and their bullpen shut everyone else down. And their bullpen had some injuries second half of the season, and they were in a tight race. They called that kid up. He was a, you know, again, first round pick. They picked him the year before, 22 years old. They called him up, had him pitch out of the bullpen. He didn't start, and he was electric. Like, he was absolutely dominant out of the bullpen, a left-hander just like Tolley, and he really propelled them into the playoffs. Unfortunately, he never really became anything as a starter. I think he kind of bounced around a few teams, and then nothing happened with him. But I would love to see something like that with Peyton Tolley. Like, call him up. You know, especially having another lefty in the bullpen is always an advantage. Like, call him up, see what he can do, you know? And if he helps you win some games here down the stretch and kind of does what Finnegan did for the Royals, kind of helps you push you, you know, into that top wildcard spot and into the playoffs, I think that's great. So I'm all for it. I hope they're not too afraid to do it, that's my only concerns. I think guys like Breslow are probably a little too, you know, iffy on that, but I'm all for it.
Yeah, I don't know really what they're scared of. Like you said, 10 years ago, they wouldn't have been worried about this kid throwing too many pitches when he's 21 years old, right? And especially when he's as big as he is, he's huge. He's like 6'6", over 200 pounds. He doesn't look like the kid that's going to wear out. You know, he's throwing 97. His last start, he got 15 in a row. He retired 15 in a row. He had a career, like season high in Ks. He looks ready. He looks ready. And I think you can see it, you know, in every playoff run, there's always, you know, one rookie on the team that doesn't really feel all the pressure yet and is just balling. You see it throughout all sports, really. And, you know, we had Devers, you know, we had Xander Bogaerts, we had Will Myrtlebrooks. You know, we had kids like that that would do that for us. And, you know, it always happens. And you can always find kids like that that are just maybe they're ready for the moment because they don't even realize what the moment is yet.
Yeah, to me, it's a win-win proposition because you get to see what you have in the kid. And if he does well, especially in lieu of the fact that we're in a playoff run, it's like, talk about doubling down on the win. Because to me, like long-term, I want the guys that want the moment, that want to be a part of the big moment. And there's no bigger moment than someone coming up here as a rookie and getting an opportunity in the middle of a playoff run, or a playoff chase, I should say, first time for us in like 5 years, and gets to be a part of that when you're literally battling it out with your number one rival to get the first wild card, potentially a division, more likely the first wild card, which, I mean, to be honest with you, it's almost just as important. It'd be great to win the division. It's less likely. It's not as realistic. The truth is, whoever gets that first wild card is going to have such an advantage over the other team because, let's face it, if it comes down to us and the Yankees, I know we just took 3 or 4 from the Bronx, but over the course of the whole season, we have both been teams that have done well at home. And it means even more to the Sox because our record at home versus on the road, there's an even greater disparity than the Yankees. They're a little bit closer to, you know, 500 both ways as far as like splitting their home versus away as far as wins. So yeah, like bring the kid up. Let's see what he has. Let's see what he can contribute. Does he have ice in his veins? And it's not to say that if he struggles, he won't down the road. But like, I think about Bayo, right? Because we've kind of been up and down on him for the last couple of years because he starts off really slow and then he has good second half. By the time he has a good second half, Sox are out of it. But the one thing that I always held on to with Bayo is like, you know what? This kid, when he plays the Yankees, he's ready for it. And like, those are the guys I want. I want guys that are like, yeah, it's the freaking Yankees. I want to come in there and just absolutely dominate. I freaking hate this team. I hate the pinstripes. And that's the one thing I held on to. And the fact that now he's actually doing well, he's putting it all together and he's having a strong second half after having a pretty good first half, and he's still killing the Yankees, it's like, check, check, check. So let's see what the kid's got.
Yeah, and the rosters expand September 1st. You know, they expand to 28. So you've got the perfect opportunity. You don't have to send anyone down. You have to DFA anybody. You can just call them right up. And, you know, Fitz just went down tonight. Hopefully it's not for too long. But, you know, if it's any kind of bicep or forearm strain, you're probably not going to see him the rest of the season at this point because he only got 1 month left. So, yeah, you'll get Slayton back. He'll take his spot. But once the rosters expand, like, I would love to see Tolley be one of the guys they call up. And then maybe Christian Campbell's the other, right? One hitter, one pitcher. Because Christian Campbell is starting to hit the ball out of the park down there. And, you know, I don't know if he's learned first base fully, if they feel comfortable putting him out there. But if he gets a couple of stints at DH, and, you know, we'll see. So I think Tolley, like, it's worth it. Who else from AAA, like, who else from the minors are you going to call up that's a pitcher that, you know, would excite you? I think Dobbins is still hurt, right? So it's probably not him. Yeah. So, like, who'd you rather have, Cooper Criswell or Peyton Tolley? I mean, come on. Like, if you're in a playoff push, you go for the big 6'6" left-hander who has, like, I think he's in the 95th percentile in terms of, like, arm extension or something like that, which means that his 96-mile-an-hour fastball looks like 102 coming at you as a hitter. Like, you don't need experience for that to be, like, that's just a natural gift that he has, that even the best of major league hitters are not going to, you know, they're not going to be ready for that. So I think it's a no-brainer to call Peyton Tolley up. Once the rosters expand, you got that free spot anyway. And then there's no pressure on him. Pitch him out of the bullpen. He's not going to have to start. Pitch him out of the pen. He's only there for the month of September. And then, you know, once the Red Sox are hopefully in the playoffs, you send him back down, you let him keep working. So I think it's just a perfect scenario for him.
100%. Especially if we get a three-game series. I love our chances in a three-game series with the pitching we have. You know, if you can go Crochet and Bayo, you know, and then, you know, you have to, then you still have Giolito if you have to. Because I'm tired of people saying Bayo isn't a number two. Because he's been nails. He is 100% a number two starter all season long. His numbers, and since like the start of June, are basically the same as Crochet's. He's in a playoff series when you can start with Crochet and Bayo, I really, really like our chances. And then you say it's a three-game series. I don't think the Yankees would stand a chance against us.
Well, a couple points there. So I think to answer your question, Jason, the only guys that I want to see, I think Kyle Harrison and Peyton Tolley, those are the only two guys that I have any interest in seeing to understand what we have, especially Kyle Harrison because he's tied to the Devers trade. I agree with you on Doug on paper. I think in a three-game series specifically, if we're home, I like our chances thinking about the fact that it's more than likely going to be the Yankees. I think the only rub is, and I had an article about this, is the only thing that would scare me is if you get Max Fried and he gives a performance like the other day and he's able to offset either a Crochet or Bayo start where it comes down to one run and one of those teams got to win and it's not us that night. I trust Bayo, but in a matchup against Rodon, we obviously have seen Rodon has pitched very well this year. We're not very good against him, specifically this season. Now, all of a sudden, you're leaving it into like a winner-take-all game because let's assume we split that. And, yeah, I like Giolito's chances, but it's, you know, as well as I do, this is baseball. When you get down to a winner-take-all, anything can happen. I think it's going to come down to matchups. Who do the Yankees strut out against the Sox starters? What do they decide to do? Do they try to go, you know, a Crochet versus Fried or a Rodon versus Crochet? Are they successful in being able to offset one of those games? Does Bayo finally have a blip on the radar? Like one of those things could happen and all of a sudden it's a completely different series. So the more we're able to see our options and really have contingency plans, if one of these guys doesn't have the start that we expect, or, you know, they do have a start that we expect and it comes down to a bullpen game, then we got to have, it's an arms race at that point. We got to have the arms to offset the Yankees because that's the one thing, the Achilles heel for the Yankees. If you get to their bullpen, specifically the bottom end of that bullpen towards the latter parts of the game, it could be advantage Sox, like a big, distinct advantage Sox. So we'll see.
Yeah, just put the ball in the field and it's advantage Sox.
That too. Yeah, I mean that you definitely have the defensive advantage.
Didn't think we'd say that for a long time.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, holy crap, are they bad on defense? It's embarrassing. Yeah. But no, it's a fair point. Like you're probably looking at that three-game series against New York. That's probably how it's going to shake out. And what worries me about that a little bit is that they're going to throw you the back-to-back lefties. It's going to be Fried and Rodon, like you said. And I know Cora loves his lefty killer lineup of Ref Snyder, Romy, you know, all that. But there's a lot of guys in this lineup that still struggle against lefties. Duran doesn't do well against them. Abreu is very inconsistent against them. Nathaniel Lowe, I don't know. I guess he does okay against lefties, but do you really trust him in that spot? So that's the only concern is that, like, yeah, you do pretty well against lefties for the most part, but usually it's like junk lefties that lineup really shows. Like when you're playing the Nationals and you get their left-hander, sure. Yeah, you put up 10 runs. There's Max Fried, Carlos Rodon.
That's why I said I think Ref Snyder coming back, especially looking at it like that, like for more of the future, is so important. He has familiarity in both, obviously, Fenway and Yankee Stadium. It's going to be in one of them. He knows the Yankees very well playing for them. And again, to your point, Jason, it gives us that dynamic of someone that we can trust to go out there and be able to hit a lefty in a spot and changes the dynamic of our lineup, especially for the players that are struggling against lefties right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so getting Rhett Snyder back, getting him healthy is huge. And, you know, Romy's still doing his thing against lefties. So I still think you're in good shape if it does end up shaking out that way, that you got to face the Yankees and, you know, in that three-game series. But, a little more consistency would be nice. But, and look, at the end of the day, getting the division would be the best part. But I don't know if Toronto's going to fumble that one away. They don't play as dumb as the Yankees, so they'll probably end up hanging on to it. So let's look ahead to tomorrow night's game. It's another early one, 6:35. So we got Lucas Giolito going for the Red Sox, and the Orioles have Kyle Bradish making his return to rotation. Hasn't pitched since June, but he's had a pretty good year for them before the injury. You know, 2-0, 2.75 ERA. So he's a tough pitcher, but again, it is his first start since coming back off the IL. So how you guys feeling about tomorrow?
I would like to see Giolito, not that he's been off track, but kind of get back on track, so to speak, with this start and just calm things down a little bit. He's been pitching okay, but hasn't been pitching. And maybe his last two or three starts haven't been what they were the two or three starts before that. So, and, you know, it's hard to know what to expect from a guy just coming right back off the DL. So, you know, hopefully he can't. I don't know if they have an innings restriction on him or anything, but hopefully you get to him early. And, you know, I think Giolito, his last game was against the Orioles, right? I can't remember how he did, but I think Giolito, I have faith in Giolito, righting the ship a little bit here and throwing a good game.
So I think Giolito pitched the first game of that Yankee series.
Right.
Last Thursday night. And he didn't pitch horrible, but it definitely, to your point, Doug, he has not been sharp the last couple of outings for him. It always seems like it feels like this has kind of been his thing all season. He's kind of gone in the opposite direction of whatever the trajectory is for the team. Like when it looks like we're starting to do well, he'd have a stinker. And then when you expected him to kind of stink, he would be kind of one of our saving graces. So I'm looking for big things from him tomorrow. It's the Orioles. Theoretically, it should be a game that can kind of get him right. I mean, again, he didn't pitch horrible against the Yankees. I would still take the Yankees lineup over the Orioles lineup at this point as far as firepower. So I would expect good things. But again, the Sox in general, pitchers, hitters, whoever, they have struggled against teams they shouldn't. I mean, even Crochet's had a couple of like rough starts against teams he should clearly dominate. So would it shock me if he didn't do well? No, but if, you know, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to take Giolito tomorrow.
Yeah, Giolito's August starts have been interesting because the strikeouts have been down and the walks have been up and the pitch count has been pretty high. So I wonder if there's just a little bit of fatigue starting to set in with him too. Kind of like talked about Narvaez, you know, he hasn't caught this much in his career. Giolito hasn't pitched this much in a while. I just wonder if it's starting to really kind of add up for him because, you know, early in the year, like he did have a start against Baltimore early in the season and he shut them out. Well, went seven shutout innings and, you know, was mowing them down. So he should do pretty well, but I do wonder if, I don't know, I just wonder if there's some fatigue going on with him. Because the walks going up is the concerning part. He's never been, you know, a Crochet strikeout kind of guy. Like he'll strike out six or seven a start, but he's not usually a double digit strikeout guy. But lately he's only been striking out like three or four guys. And then, you know, the walks are adding up and the base runners are adding up. So we'll see. I mean, this should be a good chance for him to get right. This Baltimore lineup can still be tough, as Doug, you mentioned. Like, these aren't necessarily easy games. They still got, you know, Colton Cowser's healthy again. Gunnar Henderson is incredible. And, yeah, Adley Rutschman's down, but now they call up this Basalo kid who, you know, they just gave a big extension to, who, you know, might supplant Rutschman as their everyday catcher. Who knows? Like, the kid looks legit. So they still have a tough lineup. You know, Baltimore built up that farm system for a long time, you know, because they sucked for like 10 years. And now all those kids, even, you know, even when they sold the deadline, all those kids are up and they're really good. So won't be an easy task, but I think Giolito has a chance to kind of get set, get right again tomorrow, get back on track. So I feel pretty good about it. And again, you know, Kyle Bradish coming off of the IL, and this is first start in a long time. You know, guys like that can be pretty rusty. He'll probably be on a pitch count as well. So if you can kind of get him out of there, get to that Baltimore bullpen, I think he'll be in good shape. So I feel pretty good about it for the Sox tomorrow.
It's a good point, yeah, Jason. I think the one thing with Giolito that I've noticed specifically the last couple of starts in August is he's also not had the benefit of some good calls, which has driven up that walk rate. However, he also is the type of pitcher that when he's not getting those calls, he doesn't really find a way out of it. I noticed the difference between him and Bayo is when Bayo doesn't get the call, he'll just move his pitch a little bit as far as his location on the corners, and he'll figure it out and get that strikeout or get the guy to swing and miss. Giolito doesn't. He kind of doubles down and then just expects the call. And when you're not the beneficiary, like, yeah, your walks are going to go up and, like, you're going to get roughed up because you're going to have ducks on the pond.
Definitely. Yeah. No, I think it's a great point. Like, you're right about Bayo. If he doesn't get the call, and this is a difference between a year ago, 2 years ago. Definitely. Bayo 2 years ago, if he didn't get the call, oh, my God, it ruined his whole night. Like, okay. He couldn't handle it. Now, exactly as you said, he's like, okay, I'll just go right back there, but I'll move it just a little bit, and he'll get the call and he'll figure it out. Yeah, Giolito, I think, if he doesn't get the call, it's more like, okay, well, I got to try something else. And, you know, Giolito has a bigger pitching arsenal than a guy like Bayo, so he'll go into his bag for a different pitch, but it does add up. And so I think that's why his pitch count's been higher, and, you know, it's weird because the pitch count's been higher, the innings have been less. And I know everyone's focused on that 140. He's still probably going to get there. I think, Brad mentioned in our chat, he's at 111 right now for the season. So unless he absolutely sucks his next couple of starts, he's going to get to that 140 most likely. So I don't know if that's in the back of his head, if it's in the back of the Red Sox head. I hope there's nothing weird going on with that, with the opt-in and the contract. Like, I would hate for that to be getting in the way of them trying to win games. But I really just think it's that he's been inconsistent and he needs to just have a start where it's going his way. He feels good and he's able to go out there for 6 or 7, minimal damage, let the offense do their thing. So, and you know what? We will be back after that game tomorrow night. So everyone have a good rest of your Monday night. Again, we'll be back tomorrow after the Lucas Giolito start. So we'll talk to you guys then.
Yeah. Quick shout out, Sox won't be in town, but I'll still be at Fenway tomorrow seeing the Who with my old man. Oh, so
nice.
So yeah. So enjoy that. Summer road trips are fun sometimes for Fenway.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be a Fenway if the Sox aren't there.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, yes. Go Sox.
Yeah.
Better than having to watch the Jonas Brothers like they were last weekend. So
yeah, I skipped that one.
Jeez. Yeah. But yeah. So enjoy the Who and everyone else. Enjoy the Red Sox. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care.